The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast, hosted by one of my very best friends, Mark Evan Jackson. Also here is Neutral Janet.
Correct. End of sentence.
Neutral Janet, what do we have coming up on today's episode?
Various people will say assorted words in a specific order regarding the TV program, The Good Place, end of description.
And who's today's guest?
Today's guest is a person who works on the TV program, The Good Place, in some capacity, end of guest description.
Thank you, Neutral Janet. Well said. On to the show.
Okay.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I played Sean. Today we're doing a post-finale look back, look ahead bonus episode. The truth is, this conversation simply wouldn't be complete without talking with today's guest, Edward Bridge Danson III, who played Michael Realman. Ted Danson, welcome. Everything is fine. How are you?
I'm good. Your voice is very mellow.
It's nice, right?
Yes, it is. Really nice.
Ted, how are you? What have you been up to?
I've been on the road with my wife, Mary Steenburgen, who was in Vancouver, as you know, because we hung out in Vancouver together while you were working. But Mary's doing a show called Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, also on NBC. And as soon as we wrapped The Good Place, we both went up and we were there for 6 months in Vancouver. I came and went. But I was basically there for a good 4.5 months. I was there for the rainy season.
Mm-hmm.
The rainy season, nonstop rainy season. Oof, yeah. Lordy. And then she, I was with you in New York when we watched the finale of The Good Place and then did Seth's show, and that was wonderful. And then jumped on a plane and met her in Pittsburgh, where she's doing The Happiest Season, a movie there.
Nice.
So I've been on the road a lot and also shot the pilot to the Mare project that I'm doing with Robert Carlock and Tina Fey. Nice. So that's my story for the last 7-8 months.
It was fun to be with you in Vancouver because you were free. In fact, I think when I first arrived, you had done all the stuff that you had gone to accomplish to find your life there. You had your apartment, you were finding your coffee and your dry cleaners and your groceries and your gas and all that stuff. Yes. And you had just done all that. And then we're like a little bit, you didn't know what to do with yourself with the time on your hands.
I went to a gym.
Oh, how was that?
Which is why I look so good.
You do.
This is radio, right?
It's radio.
Or a podcast or something. I look fantastic,
you do.
Y'all. I look fantastic.
In the episode, we come upon you sitting at a tape recorder talking about Attempt 803. It's a little bit of a misdirect, thinking that maybe it's another reboot. Maybe you've been bad the whole time.
Right.
And that this is still the bad place. Instead, it's you working on a song on the guitar. Do you play the guitar?
No, I played enough at age 12 mm-hmm. for a year. You have to be learning a song and be a singer of whatever, you know, be willing to sing and learn a song to get better at a guitar. Mm-hmm. If or you're a classical flamenco, whatever. But other than that, so I never sang, so my guitar skills didn't go anywhere.
Interesting.
But enough so that a day of somebody coaching me through four or five chords felt okay.
I'm actually remembering now, I think it was earlier, the Purple Train to Groovy City, maybe. or maybe it was the finale. David Schwartz came to the table read with a guitar to help you sing through some of it live in front of 75 people or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Is David Schwartz who taught you the handful of chords, or was it Mary Steenburgen?
Was it David? Yeah, it wasn't Mary.
Okay.
Because we had both had the same kind of unfamiliar with...
Oh, Mary doesn't play?
Uh-uh.
Oh, interesting.
No.
I would have
piano.
Okay.
Accordion.
Yes.
Oddly enough.
Now, do you know, have you seen, if you haven't, I'll send them to you. People have produced full-blown produced versions of like Purple Train to Groovy City.
No?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'll send them to you.
The yellow, what is the final?
Marshmallow.
The marshmallow.
Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is inside. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty crazy. I don't even know where to go, man. There's so much stuff to talk about. You have some lovely scenes at this Dance Dance Resolution. You have a lovely moment where you check in with Janet to say, like, it's okay if you're sad, and if you ever need to talk to somebody, you know, please come.
Boy, but wasn't we were all had our little moments, but then Manny the rock star came out and
do you mean dance? Oh yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And funny wise. He was so funny.
Yeah.
And I'm rambling past that scene.
Please do it.
His realization that it was time for him to move on, and his description of how he knew where the air inside his lungs feels like the air outside. Was just so, I mean, I know that's a Mike Schur line or, you know, the writing staff, but he played that so well.
Yeah.
It was so kind of sweet, beautiful, sad, and perfect.
Yeah. And then he can hip-hop dance like a pro. I mean, he is a pro.
Yeah. That was his life in Vancouver, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one of the dance instructors on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist with Mandy Moore, who's the choreographer, was best friends, a great friend with Manny.
Is that right?
Yeah, and danced with him. So
that's really cool.
He wasn't lying to us. Manny was a rock star up in Vancouver. Yeah.
You have a very sweet scene where Michael gives Tahani his bow tie, and it's a changing of the guard. She's decided that she's not ready yet to go. She wants to be an architect. She's mastered all these other skills. She mastered woodworking with Offerman.
Right.
You've been friends with Nick for a long time, right?
I have, yeah. I'm trying to think where and when we met. Oh, it must have been Fargo.
Okay.
I mean, but I was a fan of his, obviously.
And the two of you have this strange custom of sending each other, like, weird. You have a weird video app that you send.
Yes. Well, Marco Polo. Kristen Bell turned me on to Marco Polo, and it has all these different settings. So you can be a pencil drawing, or you can change your voice. And his thing was to just look at me.
It was so weird.
And then
so weird.
Yeah, it was very strange.
I was at Offerman's Woodshop couple years ago now, after we'd started working on this show, and he goes, here, let's send a message to Ted. And he holds his phone out for like a video selfie of us.
Yeah.
And he said, don't do anything until I say. And he pressed the button, and he just moved it across us, and then pressed the button again. I was like, what was that? And he goes, it's more of an art piece.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't do anything. We just looked at the camera, and then apparently it sends immediately to you.
Yeah.
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 Very strange.
Very strange, very funny.
It is a sweet moment when Michael gives Tahani his bow tie like that.
Oh yeah, we were talking about bow ties.
It's sort of a gigantic symbol of Michael. Like that, you know, Michael chose that bow tie as like, this will fool these humans into believing that they're in the good place, you know. I'm writing the backstory in my head of the head, my head canon.
It's so funny. Kirsten, what is Kirsten, our Kirsten Mann, our costumer, our costume designer, literally, along with Mike, should take credit for my character that I played, because for Michael, because she was the one, and I had no idea what to do. Truly, I knew it was, I got the story, I got, you know, the hidden backs, I got it all, but sure. I didn't know how to do it. I really didn't. And she said, during a costume fitting, we'll have you in all these suits and everything. But I was just thinking, do you want to try on this peacock bow tie? And we put it on, and it was like, oh, I know who Michael is.
Wow.
Bow ties are such a statement. When you see someone today walking down the street with a bow tie, you make some really snap big judgments like—
Like this, what?
Well, this is an odd person. This person has made a very big, odd statement in his life. And if they can carry it off, then it's kind of magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's a signal, stay away from this person. He has no sense, you know. He can't read the room. If he's wearing a bow tie, he has not read the room. So you're immediately kind of silly and suspect, which was kind of perfect for Michael, you know.
Yeah.
Because part of the— trying to find the funny in Michael before you understand, you know, in the last scene of the first season where you understand, oh, he's a demon who's pretending. From then on, funny is easy to find because you and the audience know you're playing this prank on somebody. So, you know, that's an easy joke to play.
Right.
Before that, Michael would show up in scenes and then leave. He had no private life. He couldn't turn and wink at anybody.
Yeah.
So the audience had no way of knowing, oh, I see, he's doing yada, yada. They just knew he was this raging, silly person, really, with no private life. So I think we tried to find ways to make him slightly hysterical, slightly silly, which is also purposeful because it did disarm you humans. But
it's I watched the first 10 minutes of the pilot this morning, and for the first time, great show. I'm really looking forward to it. It's so worth a rewatch because just that, Eleanor, come on in. I'm Michael. You, Eleanor Shellstrap, are dead. Looking at it now, knowing what we know Michael's super objective to have been, is fascinating. Like, yeah. You're playing tiny things that, you know, you would never would have looked for as a casual observer, including, I don't know, people just love frozen yogurt. I don't know what to tell you.
That was a hard year, the first year for me. I was hard for me to watch. Because, you know, usually when you're doing a comedy, you have a moment and you reach for your funny gun and it's loaded and you fire away. I kept reaching for my funny gun and I didn't know what it was like empty, the bullets. Because it was not like anything I'd ever done before.
Sure.
Because usually funny comes from someone knowing that what I'm saying to you ain't true,
right?
Or is the not how I really feel, or something, so that there's like a ha-ha going, a kind of triangular thing.
Right.
There was no triangle. I was just silly.
Yeah.
And that was hard.
Hard for you to play,
to watch.
Hard for you to watch. In the final product.
Ooh, you're being, why are you being so silly?
But you're so good.
But it paid off.
It certainly
paid off in spades, so.
But I mean, I don't know. It feels to me as though it so wonderfully informed your character, up to and including what we just saw in the Patty episode, the Hypatia episode. Like, you know, you in that robe and deciding what signature you're going to use, Dr. Blob, or, you know, athlete who doesn't really care about the kid. Your fingers, when you run into the, when you fly into the room in your robe because you've smoked some grass.
Right.
It's so great. And I think that had to have been, those seeds were planted when you were, you know, laying haymakers with your funny gun. Not
so funny, when I turned 65, all of a sudden getting any character that I was playing stoned. I think it's funny to see people in their 70s stoned.
Sure.
It's just not, it's not right.
Yeah.
You know,
Kristen's coming up to you. It's very funny. We're like, hey, bud. Did you smoke some of that weed?
Yeah.
Oh, man. There's a wonderful moment where Eleanor mirrors that, the reveal in season one. She says, it took me a while to figure it out. You're never going to be at peace until you get the one thing you truly want. And it's the moment where you go, are you suggesting that I'm going to be a human? And she says, you're going to be a real boy, Pinocchio.
We had the luxury, all of us, knowing that we weren't coming back, that the end of the fourth season was the end of our story. And Mike told us all, pretty much a week or two into starting that season. So we had all season to say goodbye, to experience sadness, to celebrate, to... and I'm bringing this up because that scene, the last two episodes, which were the last episode you saw on air,
sure,
was pretty much when we were as people really saying goodbye to each other. You know, I don't have an excuse to see Kristen Bell every day, and yeah, I'll miss Will doing such and such. You know, and Manny and da 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 da. And Jamila and Darcy and you know, all of us were beginning to realize, wow, we don't have this excuse anymore. And the characters were realizing that as well. So I think characters got to say goodbye to each other and actors got to say goodbye to each other. And the sadness kind of all dovetailed into something really wonderful and sweet and tender, I think, to watch. And that included that moment of, oh, you're giving me something, you know, that I want so much. Michael so loved human beings and wanted to, the idea of being one was like a dream come true. And then, I know I'm jumping around.
Do it.
I thought it was brilliant that Mary, my wife, Mary Steenburgen, got to play the guitar teacher that allowed the audience to go, oh, Michael will get to experience falling in love. Mm-hmm. Just because of the baggage Mary and I bring. People know that we're together and we're in love and all of that.
Which you see as baggage.
Good baggage. We all have baggage. Louis Vuitton, maybe, but we all, you know.
Very rich.
Very rich.
Talk about that.
I just love that. I mean, to me in my life, Ted, the fact that because of Mary, I've gotten to feel what it's like to be loved and what it's like to love. And to me, that is, you know, if and when.
When
I
and
die. When. It's a rumor. There'll be part of me, when I was younger, I used to think, oh, if I get hit by a bus today, part of me is going, shoot, I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I didn't do it. And I feel like I've done it. And I feel like I've done it because I got to love and be loved.
Wow.
And Michael, and that's such a human thing. I mean, you know, and I love that Mike and Mary and, you know, got together on this thought of her being that person.
How did that come to pass?
I don't know who yet. In my household, it felt like Mary thought about it.
Really?
Yeah. And then I mentioned it, but I think probably Mike was already thinking about it, you know, so I don't know. But it was like an idea that was kind of perfect.
We watched, the audience watched this in New York.
We
sort of peeked in watching.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And Offerman's reveal was you know, very satisfying to the audience.
Yes.
There's a lot of, you know, Parks and Rec mention and crossover, and obviously he's just a beloved human being and figure. And then the same happened with Mary, when the audience saw her.
She got so much online.
Is that
stuff.
Right?
Yeah, it was just kind of perfect. And responding the way we were just talking about, you know, how wonderful for Michael.
It's lovely what we see him go through, right? He has friends and...
Can we back up? The reason why we're talking about this is what Mike created, Mike and his astounding writers and writing staff.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yes, we're fanning our face right now and saying how wonderful it was to be part of and how wonderful it is, the show, and da-da. So I just want to explain why we're being so self-congratulatory. It was such a special show to be part of. You know, it is, it's about being decent. It's about, there are consequences to our actions. You put off a certain amount of good and a certain amount of bad, everything you do, and it goes out into the universe and you are accountable. Ultimately, just try to be better every day. Just try to be better. All these things that are so wonderful to put out in the universe today, out into the world, and I know that because I of the faces of the 12-year-olds that come up to us all in airports and say, oh, my goodness, you know, I love the show. And then the parents come up and we go, we love the show. And it's because it is, yes, it's wrapped in 9-year-old fart humor, so it's funny, and it's visually surprising, mm-hmm. and it treats you like a really smart person who cares about something called ethics. It's really a special thing that we got to be part of, all of us. And it feels like my dream, you never know, but my dream is that the next batch of 12-year-olds that come online will watch this, mm-hmm. you know, and so it'll be around for a while because it's worth that message being out in the world.
It's a remarkable show by virtue of its content and subject. It was a remarkable workplace by virtue of the cast and crew and writers. I've worked on other things since. It's less fun. Ted, what have you heard post-finale from Twitter, from Instagram? Have you heard any reaction?
Well, I mean, I don't go online, so I don't know what the social media response was and is and all of that. So my social media is walking through airports. and I am still getting the 12-year-olds and their parents. I'm still getting construction workers in New York City when I'm going, wait, what? You watch? I mean, it attracts the most amazing audience. I'm so sorry, it's over. You know, I get a little of that, but no one feels ripped off. I think the ending was so kind of perfect. One of my friends, David and Sally Hackle, Dave and Sally Hackle, wrote me after the end and said that they both turned to each other as the credits rolled and said, I certainly hope it's that way. Hmm. You know, I hope that this is how the universe works. And I think that's kind of how, that's what was so amazing about it. It was sad, sweet, and hopeful, all in the same. And I think, so to answer your question, the feedback I get when I walk around is that people got that and felt that. So Mike's intention, I think, paid off.
I think I want to talk about these next scenes out of order. You shot the end of the show, the hilariously silly, take it sleazy as the last words of this very special project. You actually shot that earlier, before we were in the Redwoods. What was that like? Did it take the pressure off it that those weren't the very last words you spoke as Michael, do you think? I'm certain it was done for scheduling reasons, not for this reason. But would you rather that have been the very last thing you shot?
No. Because of the experience of being in the most beautiful ring of redwoods that were 1,500 plus years old, mm-hmm. with most of the cast, and being able to say goodbye in that magical place was too perfect. Either I am not intellectual, period, or I choose not to be intellectual as an actor or something. What I'm trying to say is I try to show up know my lines, and then let the lines play me, you know, and if the words are and lines are good enough, I don't think about a how-to or anything, you know. I'm not even sure I knew what take it sleazy meant in the deepest, the import of it.
Really?
I knew that it was important. I knew that I was saying, I say this with all the love and wisdom of the universe. Mm-hmm. I knew that as an actor, I better not get in the way of the word. Mm-hmm. I needed to be really there. You know how you are either there or not as an actor?
Sure.
And in life, you know, you're either trying to demonstrate that you're present and you're listening, or let me show you, I understood your note you just gave me, Mr. Director, or here's my idea of what this character should be doing.
Right.
It's 50-50 at best if you're actually in the moment, present. And that felt to me like I needed to keep doing that scene, that moment, until I did get there. And that was all I had to do.
How many times do you feel like you did it?
Probably six or seven times.
It's not very many times.
No.
It's not.
Well, so what if that's baseball, what, that's one out of seven? What is that?
Yeah, 150.
Yeah. So I didn't care. You know, maybe to be a little more reflective, it was the same day I shot the stuff with Mary.
Is it really?
So there was, yeah. So there was, it was right down the, in the apartment complex. It was four doors down on the left. And so there was a sweetness in the air already for me. There was an emotion in the air already. So to play the last scene, moment of the show was fine because it was all... It was that moment of mm-hmm. sweetness and, you know, thoughtfulness. I'm rambling badly.
That's why we have you here. The Redwood Forest was pretty extraordinary. An unbelievable setting. Somewhere not far from San Francisco, somewhere near Half Moon Bay.
Coast, yeah.
Yeah.
Private reserve mm-hmm. that had been kept forever.
And truly, there were trees that were 2,300 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
A gorgeous setting. A gorgeous setting for you to do some hilarious physical comedy. Your attempts through the door.
That was fun.
Oh, my goodness. And then you found that moment of inching your way to your left behind the tree and then poking your head out.
No, that was... I'm sorry. I wish I could take credit for this.
Mike
stuff.
Sure gave
Mike
you credit.
Mike Sure.
He gave you credit for it.
That's because he wasn't sure it worked.
Okay.
So he threw me under the bus. And it was Mike's idea because I'm not sure it worked. No. It worked. Yeah. It was, to be honest, it was Mike.
Is that true?
Well, like I say, I don't really remember.
I had to introduce myself to you like an hour ago.
I know. Yeah. I know. And I do thank you for that.
The name tag feels like overkill, but I'll wear it.
Whatever.
You're trying to piggyback on KB. It was very funny to try to get through the door.
That was funny.
Yeah.
That was very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny. That's a funny visual.
And then you were series wrapped there in that cathedral of, you know, relatively new growth.
Yeah.
Redwood Forest. That was it's kind of a special moment.
It was. And I'm going to throw Mike under the bus again, but... because he wrote this and then he went about casting it. And so I'm not saying he's the only person, but it was a group of people, including the crew, thanks to Morgan Sackett and Mike. But everybody there, all the actors, were so grateful to show up to work every day, so appreciative, so celebratory. Such amazing people that saying goodbye in the Redwoods to this group of people was so sweet, you know.
Yeah.
Because I guess you can be a bunch of
assholes
and make a really good project.
Happens every day.
But this was one of those moments where, no, these are sweet people.
Mm-hmm. Something wonderful happened, which was that Seth Meyers agreed to do a...
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah.
That moment of us toasting
mm-hmm.
that came from Amy, right?
Poehler.
Amy Poehler, who at rap parties... Sorry, I'm jumping the gun.
I
should let you... But at rap parties, and Mike told us all this, that rap parties are horrible things to go to, by and large. They're tough. But she had this brilliant idea to start a toast. One person, probably her, would start and pick one person in the room. That means all of the crew, all of the actors, mm-hmm. and toast that person and say why she was lifting a glass to that person, what makes them special, and to thank them for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person has to turn to somebody else and pass it on and toast somebody else. It took the entire rap party to do this room of probably 120 people.
Yeah.
And I would guess you could hear a pin drop because it was so acknowledging and you dropped your party face. And in our case, we did this with Seth.
Mm-hmm.
All the actors took turns toasting each other.
Yeah.
And you dropped your TV face. We're being filmed, and I hope I look good, and you know, and we should be slightly funny and entertaining, and dropped that entirely and said goodbye to our dear friends on the air. It was so sweet. It was a sweet opportunity for us, and I would guess it was a sweet thing to see.
Oh, I'm certain of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the audience for it, and it was absolutely lovely. And it's such a special thing that that Seth agreed to do that. That allowed the finale episode to be the supersized supersize that it was, even more than just, you know, 2.5 hours. It was longer than that.
But he's the same cloth.
Isn't
or,
he?
Or a similar cloth to Mike Schur.
Yeah.
He is incredibly bright and perceptive and sweet and kind. There's a real intelligence there that's lovely to be around. Let me go back on you now, bud.
That's not
necessary. You know, no, it is, because you were an integral part of the cast, but you weren't there every day. You were integral because you were the antagonist. You know, without you, we didn't have anything to bounce off of. But you weren't there every day. And so you had this view of us from a little bit outside the circle at times. And whenever we'd have a cast photo, you would sit there and stand, and you happen to be there, stand off the side until we all screamed at you to come join us. But there was this sense of a biographer watching
mm-hmm.
this. And now you're doing this podcast where you are so well-equipped to talk about every episode and paint a picture for people listening. You are really quite remarkable, and I admire you and appreciate you hugely, as do we all.
Thank you, Ted.
Yeah.
That's very kind of you.
And I'm out. Bye.
Bye. Door, car noises. We watched the night before Seth. A lot of the producers and the cast and everybody were gathered in a hotel in New York. And we got together in a screening room and screened the last episodes. And as the biographer, I watched you watch this gorgeous closure. That was a wonderful time to be together.
Yeah.
I had seen it a bunch, you know, Morgan and Mike and Drew and some others had seen it, but the cast hadn't. You hadn't seen it.
No.
Do you remember what it felt like?
Deeply, deeply satisfying. Usually I watch with a critical eye, an egotistical, vain eye.
Mm-hmm.
I barely notice that there are other actors even, you know, up on screen with me. There was none of that. It was like, I think Mike, I'm putting words into his mouth, but thought of this as a gift to whoever watches, to the audience. You know, this is what we want to say about the universe is our little gift. We may not be right, but it's offered to you as a gift
mm-hmm.
with lots of all the love and the wisdom in the universe mm-hmm. is coming from us to you with this little gift of a show. That's highfalutin, but
it's real.
It's true.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, for Mike, I know that. He's one of the most decent, in the best sense of the word, men I've ever known. He's truly a decent man. So it also, sitting in that room, felt like he and David Miller, our director of photography, and every member of that crew had gotten together and made this last hour as a gift to the cast as well. It was just this wonderful goodbye.
Yeah.
That was satisfying on all levels. It was like, and a lot of us hadn't seen it. you know, right. We weren't all in KB, Kristen Bell was the driving character in this last hour. She was pretty much everywhere. So she probably knew what a lot of the scenes were, but most of us had not been in half of that,
sure,
you know, hour. So to watch, for me to sit there and watch my friends be so beautiful, you know, Will and Kristen sitting on a sofa or some chairs, you know, talking about Time to Move On or
the wave.
The wave. Ah, everybody's goodbye I hadn't seen, you know. It was so delicious to watch your friends just, not just be good, but you were, it went beyond, oh, everyone's acting so well and it's so well directed and written. It went into, oh, thank you for sharing how this amazing feeling you just engendered in me by me watching you say goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, it was really lovely.
A neat thing happened during a commercial break at Seth, which is you looked around and it was so cool. You are so cool. You got up and walked straight past the cameras to the bleachers where the crowd was, the crowd who had just watched it in real time moments before the appearance on Seth. And you just wanted to say hello. And they...
Forking.
Loved it.
Yeah, I was getting short of oxygen, so I had to go.
What does that mean?
I just needed acknowledgement.
Oh, you needed
I needed face to face.
A little ego.
Yeah,
ego
it was boost. Pure. I was That's starting to get true. Faint.
No, you have this thing about you, Ted, where like you know the value of connection.
Of being a good host.
Yes. Yeah.
No, that is your job. I know not everyone. I mean, part of being well-known as an actor is you are hosting people's experience and memory of you. You made them laugh, and so they see you, or you were part of something that made them laugh. So they see you walking down an airport, and they smile, and they want to come say something. And your job is to meet that sweet energy with something back that makes them feel good about it, the interchange. And so you are a host, you know, you are, and I think that's important. And it feels good to me. It feels good to that was funny. And I had fun and thank you for talking and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a circular thing that you end up feeling. It's not altruistic only, you know, it is also, I feel better by being a good host to people out there in the world.
I think it's wonderful. And it's not self-serving. It's not, you know, egotistical. Like, it's part and parcel to this job, I think.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, beginning to touch on this, and it does feel like part of it.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. The moment you did that, the crowd absolutely went crazy. You just wanted to connect. And then the rest of the cast was inches behind you.
Yeah.
And it was just about the most wonderful thing. We watched the episode, you know, sort of in the back, watching the crowd watch it. You guys were then on Seth. And then we went up to the Rainbow Room at 30 Rock.
Very rock and roll, although I only remember a little bit of it.
Is that right?
Yes.
Because?
Because my daughter and her boyfriend and some in-laws came. And they had been out to dinner and had a few drinks.
Sure.
And so they were very excited to see all of you and all of us and me. And they were not lubricated, but pretty well on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was tired and really part of me wanted to go to bed. And that wasn't going to happen.
That wasn't going to happen, was it?
No. And the way, I hate to say it, but for me to be energized at that time of night is to go, well, screw it. I will have a tequila.
Mm-hmm.
And because the bar is so far away, I will have a double tequila. I won't have to go back.
Sure. I mean, it's a matter of convenience.
Yes, yes. And
efficiency.
So I had two double tequilas and was having a wonderful, raucous time with folks.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was suggested that we go to the Stonewall.
I don't know it, but you told me what it was.
Yes, it's a to watch a cabaret show. But I think the Stonewall is bar, I think, is a historical. It's where there were riots in the 50s.
Oh, that's why.
Because, yes, because it was a gay bar and it was being, you know, hammered by the police. And at one point, I guess there was a, you know what, enough. And there was a full-on riot. So it's a historical place. And we went down to see a drag cabaret, but we got there just as it had finished.
Oh, no.
So I missed it. But there was a pool table and more tequila. And I literally, my sweet, sweet friends and daughter, literally kind of, what's the word, frog march, you know, whatever, you know, they grabbed each arm, and I have several, and walked me out to the car, because I would not have been able to weave my way through
Good
the
heavens,
bar.
Really?
I'm like, oh, I counted. I had 7 double tequilas.
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah, it's next door to alcohol poisoning. You know, it was like really silly and delightful. And can I say I woke up at 7 the next morning and felt fantastic.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
You couldn't have slept that long.
The next day I was in bed.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere along the line it caught up with me. But anyway.
Let's talk a little bit about Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Yeah.
That's what had you in Vancouver for so long.
Yes.
Mary was working on it. I've watched the first 2 episodes. It's a fascinating show.
Yeah.
I think it's like that's going to be a special endeavor.
Yeah. I find it joyful. I find it joyful. I find that when you all of a sudden, you're sitting there watching it, and you're going, okay, I think I understand this character, and it's a pilot, and you never quite know. And then all of a sudden that character breaks into a song and dance that is appropriate to what's going on inside of them. And it's like startling, but also incredibly revealing, because music goes straight, communicates on this different level. So the next time you see that actor in a scene, you go, I know you, which was pretty cool for a pilot, you know.
Pretty great.
Yeah. Very smart, and it was joyful. And Mandy Moore's choreography is just also so accessible, because she doesn't want just dancers. She wants every, you know, next door people being able to move and dance. And it's Mary's, you know, I think childhood dream to sing and dance. And she's not a natural singer. She works at it, and she's good. And she got so much better, like, I watched her singing towards the end going, wow. So, and she was going, someone's paying me to be a better singer.
Yeah.
This is pretty amazing. And Mandy was always a delight to work with.
I was with you a few times when Mary was giddy to go off to a dance school, a rehearsal, because that's not her natural background. Right?
No, and she was incredibly brave, because she would be with Broadway hoofers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people who are extraordinary dancers who, you know, but what she has is she has, first off, guts and perseverance, but she would practice in our
palatial Skyward apartment.
But thank God she needed the space. And she would practice and have other dancers come work
with
her. Oh, Lord.
Wow.
Yeah.
There was room for it.
Yeah. There was dancing and practice and singing and Skyping with singing. It was such a creative time up in Vancouver. Pretty cool.
It was neat. I remember seeing you one morning and you said, oh, we were just, they did a late night rehearsal for a big production number.
Yes,
I was like, wait a second. I've got the music in me. And you were like, yeah. And I was like, oh, I walked past that on my way to dinner last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was when just, I was up there shooting Baby
It's really neat. And they showed it on NBC about 2 months ago, the pilot, and then it was streaming. They had 40 million people, 40 million people, literally. I think it's going to be a big hit, you know, and it's NBC.
NBC, Sunday nights, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know that part.
I believe that's the case.
Very cool.
I can't imagine what their music licensing must be. They did help.
But it's Universal.
Okay.
So Universal owned most of that stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, some of the singers, I mean, Alex, and I can't remember his last name at the moment. Sorry, Alex, is just like crazy. Skylar crazy.
Aston, yeah.
You know, all of these people are just...
They can do it.
Yeah.
Jane Levy is...
Jane is amazing.
I didn't know her before, but my goodness.
Yeah. No, it's a great show. I'm very excited for Mary.
It was fun to watch Mary be like, you know, nervous about it and then, you know, obviously destroy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, pretty cool.
Let's talk about the Untitled Mayor Project. Still the title of it, right? It doesn't have a proper thing.
Correct.
It's something you're doing next for NBC with Tina Fey and Robert Carlock. You played the mayor of Los Angeles?
I do.
You've shot the pilot so far?
Oh, you haven't seen it, so you can't raps. I just watched it this morning for the first time. Yeah.
What'd you think?
I liked it.
Good. You seem surprised.
I had to watch it four times to get to the point where I realized there were other actors in the scenes
sure.
with me. That's just the way it is, folks.
I mean, look.
Yeah.
Truth.
And they're good.
That's wonderful. Bobby Moynihan, I remember
Bobby Moynihan is one of those amazing actors. He was on Saturday Night Live for years, and I think like the top five longest running actors.
Is that right?
That show. Yeah, or something like that. He's one of those actors for me that... They just cut to his face, and I'm now going to start laughing. I can relax. Whatever's going to come my way will make me laugh hysterically. He's that walk through the door funny, and such a sweet man too. I'm starting to get to know him. Really, really enjoy him. So we have that kind of crazy funny. We have Holly Hunter, who's my nemesis, and Holly's like ferocious. She's such a good actor.
Mm.
You've seen her over the years win stuff and like, you know, she's good. Really, really good. And ferocious.
You mean she's unpleasant?
No. Her energy is like, you know, you walk into a room and it's like, I'm not going to fuck with her. And she's 5 foot.
Right.
You know, so she has this wonderful energy of, as a matter of fact, the character as written, I went, oh boy, I don't know. Can they pull that off?
You asked me. We were talking about it one day at lunch.
Yeah,
you were like, who's a Kira Sedgwick type that could be
Yeah. And boy, she nailed it. And it's just wonderful. Thanks. She hates me. She hates my character and is just wonderful to bounce off of. She's really good. So that, yeah. And David Miller, who shot our...
Oh, the DP?
Yeah. Our DP is, for The Good Place, is the DP on the Untitled Mayor Project, and it looked great. You know, it's me rambling right now. I don't know. We are discovering who we are.
Sure, I'm sure.
I really enjoyed watching it.
You've shot only one so far?
One so far.
Okay.
We start Monday. With the rest. I think it's smart. You usually shoot something and then take some time off, even though because it's Tina Fey, the network picked up a full order.
Right.
You still take that month off to cut it together and go, oh, this is who we are. Because you have all these intentions on the page, but then when you shoot it, you have to go with what's coming out of the actor and then you discover who you are. Yep.
Something I found very sweet, I was driving on the Universal lot after recording the lengthy finale episode of this podcast with Mike Schur and Drew Goddard, and saw Wes Albrecht working on your show. Did you take Wes as your personal costume?
Wes, yes, sorry. Oh my God, yes. He's not my personal costumer. He is the doctor on the set. You know, he is the costumer. But he will watch me and other actors watch me as I start to, my blood sugar starts to flag at about 1 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden there's an apple with almond butter and there's, you know, there's water. He can see when I start to flub a line. Here, Ted, drink this. He's like
they'll bring spa water.
Yes. I haven't had that yet.
Oh,
that might
I'll
have just him. Been a good place thing. Yeah, he's remarkable. And so many of the camera crew are there.
Is that
as
right?
Well, yeah. And Bill, who was my stand-in for years.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So it was a little odd. It's like familiar, but not, you know, because there are a lot of new faces. But I also have this feeling, that David Miner, who's, I think, the exec producer on this, and Werner, who's our Morgan Sackett. It's a great group of people, and Tina and Robert run a very life is too short, let's all have fun set. So it feels like it's going to be very similar to the experience on the floor of The Good Place.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, in addition to people having produced versions of things like Purple Train to Groovy City, we've talked about the snacks that Wes would bring you on this show, and people have adopted 10:30 a.m. like little nut break and an apple with peanut butter or almond butter.
And by the way, Jamila, something in her upbringing, maybe she was starved at some point, or she was in, I think she probably spent time in prison when you think about it. So that, you know, she would, my hand would reach for my snack and, you know, it would be slapped away and her hand would come in and take the first bite. She could be across the room. She could be in her trailer and come running out to get my snack. She was amazing. She was, you know, she had a hard part.
Oh my goodness.
You know?
Yeah.
To be vapid,
self-obsessed.
Gorgeous, self-obsessed. And pull all of the above off was quite a trick. And she wasn't an actor.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't acted before. She was a writer or a host, presenter. Celebrity host, presenter in England. Yeah, kudos. Hats off to her.
Last question about the Untitled Mayor project.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell us how it ends? Would you like to spoil it?
Turns out.
Is it? I mean, it's got to be easier not having giant secrets to keep, right?
Yeah, I don't... Well, it turns out that we solve all of LA's problems.
Can't wait.
Yeah. We're going to be funny, but we are going to pass all of the episodes to the city council, and they are going to implement.
Amazing.
You watch.
Sure.
LA, the longer our show is on, will get better and better and better.
Ted Danson. What's good?
Okay, given that I'm a Pollyanna-ish character in life, life is good. The opportunity to have a life is good. My three granddaughters are good because they're so funny. My children are great. I've already talked about Mary, but I get to, you know, 99% of the time, I get to laugh, be loved and love this by this amazing person. I get to be creative. I'm 72. I get to wake up and go, try to find the funny, try to perfect a funny moment, which I love doing, and it's done with such seriousness. I love being an actor. I think it's a noble thing that we do. When done well, we are reflecting humanity. We are defending our character as if our lives depend on it, which is kind of the joke of life, I think. We are all defending our lives as if life depends on it. So it's this great profession, and I get to be part of it still. This podcast is good.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. Podcasts, there's like a billion of them. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. And I mean that. Thank you. This time, the last months since we've wrapped, and the past few weeks since the series finale aired, has been overwhelming. The messages that have been shared with us about the show and even about this podcast have been unbearably wonderful, crushingly kind and meaningful. There have been too many to respond to, each one directly, and frankly, it's been too difficult, too emotional to engage. But know that we've seen them, and that we see you, and that we are thankful. Thank you to all you messy benches who have started your own daily affirmations, or launched your own What's Goods, or Something Goods, or Candy Bags, or Trivia Nights, or Cookbooks, or Board Games, or Cosplay, or Halloween costumes, or action figures. Thank you for the wonderfully creative and legitimately great fan art of every variety. No, I wasn't in Norway in mid-2018. You might check on Clark Gregg's whereabouts. Thank you to the many of you who have let us know that there's a real town west of Flagstaff, Arizona named Ash Fork. To all of you who've written to say that The Good Place has been helpful in an otherwise dark time for you, who've listened to The Good Place, the podcast, first thing in the morning, last thing before bed, on your commute, your walk, your cross-country drive, even your dialysis or chemotherapy. To the pastor who told me recently that The Good Place changed his view on what the afterlife might be. To the bunches of you who have said that this unusual half hour has made you aware of the small things in life that we can do for one another and are doing them. To those of you who have even recently suffered the loss of loved ones and found hope in this show's message and outlook, in the sure hope of a reunion someday. To the psychotherapist working with trauma survivors who wrote to say that the existential hope offered by The Good Place has sparked a wave of post-traumatic growth across all demographics and levels of symptom severity. And these are only some. To all of you, thank you. You put these messages in bottles and cast them into the sea, not knowing if they'd arrive, if they'd ever be read. They have. We read you loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Now, go drink margaritas through a Twizzler straw until you pass out on your vibrator. Or go try. Go listen to that little voice. Go have enough time with the people you love. Go be better today than you were yesterday. Go be the very best version of yourself. Go do something good.
Janet, what have we learned today?
The good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
Edited by Trey Booty. Booty? Booty.
Oh, Janet.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.